Roy Milner, Rio 2.
As a prefect.
At school.
At school, and a house prefect. So that way you can say I did well. But also it's true what you said earlier on, that it could be the start of criminal activities because I wasn't even an angel there. I didn't do anything, you know, sort of blatant, but I at one time was what they called the poultry boy. And the boss had about 4 pens of chickens, I suppose altogether about 200 chickens. And I fed them and watered them and cleaned them out and collected the eggs and took them into the bus and recorded all these things and so on. You did this when you were 14, so you'd officially left school, in other words, left the academic side. You were now working all day. Some worked in the gardens and kitchens.
We paid. Oh,
well, no. We used to get good behaviour money at the end of the week. Buy houses, and you were each given individual marks, and if your house total marks was the highest, you, if you'd gained your mark, you got threepence. If your house hadn't got the top mark, it would be tuppence for the other 3 houses anyway, tuppence each. If you were a prefect, you got, no, if you were a captain, you got sixpence. If you were a prefect, you got ninepence a week. In not many prefects used to ever lose marks. I mean, most of your house, 30 people, most of your house could lose the odd mark or two, but prefects seldom, if ever. And so I used to get ninepence a week, whole ninepence, all of the ninepence. And you could do what you like with it. We used to send a chap down to the tuck shop every Saturday night with a big list, you know, official this was. Go down and get this for this house, that house, that. It was to send these chaps down to tuck shop to get it. But I used to collect the eggs, and I used to average it out. And I used to think 50 hens with an average of, shall we say, 40 eggs. I must bring that average down to 36 and save 4 on Monday. By the end of the week, I had probably saved 2 dozen. And the eggs I took into the boss, or his maid, she used to rack them up. And the boss would send for him and say, I've got 6 dozen eggs in there for you to go out and sell. And I had a sort of select number of customers. You could go to the first house and she'd say, how many have you got? I'd say, 6 dozen. She'd say, have them all. Just like that. Well, on the way, I used to go through the chicken runs and collect my 2 dozen. Put them in the basket. And the first 2 dozen I sold were in my pocket. Sold them at the same price. Of course, that was no differently. So this way it was a fiddle. But then, like I said about India, this fiddle was handed on to me. I didn't think it up. It was handed on to me by the earlier chicken boy or poultry boy. So I handed it on to the next one. It might still be going. I don't know.
When you joined the Dorsets, did you find that other boys in the regiment came from a similar background to yourself?
Yes. Quite a large number of the boys came from Dr. Bernardo's, which might be slightly similar. At a place in Norfolk, most of them seemed to come from Dr. Bernardo's, and we had some from a school in Dover, actually. The name escapes me at the moment, but there was another school in Dover. Very few from normal civilian life, one or two running away from the police, but all in all, and I think at this age in our lives now, we would all admit it, a very seedy bunch, wicked little devils and so forth and so on. A few from London, here, I'm the chap here in London now, still now, and we knew each other when we were 16, when we joined up. I joined from Northumberland, he joined from London. He's still here in London, I still see him. And, you know, we're the best of friends. One or two came in and didn't last long. They just nipped off and we've never seen them since. And I think, couple of them might have been picked up by the police and run into jail and this sort of thing. But the boys, the chaps who joined as boys, were my type, if you like, from reform schools, that type, orphanages. And fellows who didn't want home life and didn't know where the next meal was coming from. I mean, the 30s was like this. Half the army were there because they didn't know where the next meal was coming from. The funny thing was, they made excellent soldiers, I think, anyway.
How well did you play your music when you joined?
Looking back, not very well. I played well enough. You've heard of colliery bands and this sort of thing.
Yes.
Our school band was rather like a junior colliery band. And we used to be engaged to play at football matches. Not, I hasten to say, things like Newcastle United versus Sunderland, but Walker Celtic is a team you've never heard of, but it's a well-known minor team in Newcastle area. Walker Celtic and somebody else, cup final. And the band of Axel Park School. We didn't have any uniforms, just our normal, as they used to say, Gansey and pants. And we used to play. And I could play solos on the cornet as a boy. Of course, when you come into the army, you find that what you can play is what the chap there has forgotten. You know, you are so, they are so good that you're a mere nothing. And from being the senior cornet player in a school band, you come to be the most junior, second, or even third cornet player in the military band. And as the bandmaster and I didn't get along very well, I didn't progress musically very well whilst I was in the band. We never, I don't know what it was between us, but we never hit it off for some unknown reason. I think I'd come away from school where I'd had this discipline, and I'd now joined the army where I thought, you know, fair's fair. I like fairness, and my kids will tell you, I'm fair if nothing else. I hate people being punished for what they didn't do and this sort of thing. And he would say something to me, and I'd say, I didn't say that. I didn't say anything. But he'd say, put him in the guardroom, Sergeant. And I used to think, I've done anything, you know. I was furious, and I could never see eye to eye with the bandmaster. So as soon as I was able, I transferred from the band to the Corps of Drums. Now, there are two musical sides of the regiment, and they will tell you in the regiment that the drums are really the pride of the regiment. They're all the show, the swinging sticks and the goat skins and whatever, all this sort of thing. Join that and you march behind blowing a tin whistle. And the band, of course, they always termed them the gentlemen of the regiment. Well, if I was nothing else, I was never a gentleman in those days. So I was perhaps a little bit out of my depth. So I joined the drums, and I never looked back. I mean, I never looked back from the time I joined the drums. They seemed to be more my type. And I got along very well with my music there, and I soon became a very good flute player and a good bugler, because within 12 months of getting in there, I was CO's bugler, which you get by competition. You have to go out and sound all sorts of calls in front of a team of judges. And I was CO's bugler, which was one of those perks which was to be sought after to some extent, because on big parades and things, you didn't do anything. You marched behind the CO, and if he said blow a call, which he never did, you blew it. And when there's a big kerfuffle in the regiment, I remember I was CO's bugler at the time, we moved from Portland to Dover. You imagine all the hubbub that went on within the regiment prior to the move. There was fatigues right, left and centre. People were doing this, scrubbing this, cleaning up this, emptying this, you know, getting... I never did a stroke. I packed my kit and that's all. And the rest of the time I was at the disposal of the CO. I had to dress up in best and with my bugle. And he'd go round and inspect all the married quarters. But I was always the first one there. I used to knock at the door and say, good morning, Mrs. Banks. Commanding officer's coming in. You would know he was coming anyway. There would have been a circular. Then I'd go on and prepare the next one. Morning, Mrs. Brown. Commanding officer's coming in. On big ceremonials like Armistice Day, that sort of thing, we marched off to Cenotaph, all spit and polish, everybody being inspected, not me. I got dressed. Morning, sir. Report the CO. And just marched behind him, carrying the wreath, which he was going to lay. You know, an idle time, really. Till I spoilt it. There are things that they don't like in the army. They don't like being late. And when we were at Dover once, we all had a weekend. You always had to have music on Sundays to march the battalion to church. But you could let the band go on a weekend this week and miss church parade. And next week, and the drums would do it on their own. And next week, the drums could go and the band would do it on their own. Then you'd have a couple of weeks while they're all together. We went on a weekend in drums and all. Seven or eight of us came up to London on Saturday morning, I think it was, we all came. Or was it Friday night? But we all agreed to catch the milk train back on Monday morning. I found out, I was only silly so-and-so that caught the milk train. And instead of being back in barracks by Rivalli, which was 6:30, I didn't get there till 8:30. And I was on the hook. And the adjutant who was in charge of the drums was, he was very cross indeed. When you get a weekend's pass and you're supposed to be in at 6:30, it means 6:30, and it doesn't mean 6:35, nor even 6:45. And I'm daring if it means 8:30 a.m. will not. For that, you will lose the honour of being commanding officer's bugler, and you will get 7 days CB. And I think from there, I was on my way to India, because I'd upset the adjutant. I didn't go to India on a draft. Corps of drums in India, corps of drums in England. Somebody in the Corps of Drums there is finishing his time and is coming home. We have to send a relief because the two Corps of Drums will keep up a standard number, a complement. So I had to relieve somebody who was coming home. I could have remained in England if I'd not been naughty lad and been late. But they said, right, you're three of us. You three are reliefs for the three coming home. And that's the way I got to India, in point of fact. I hated it at the time, but as I say now, I wouldn't have missed it. And it was a great part of my life.
You mean you hated the idea of going?
Hated the idea of going, yes. I think merely because I was courting. No other reason. I had a nice bird, as they say these days. And I didn't want to go. If I hadn't gone when I did, I should think that probably the following year I'd probably got married.
Is she the woman you did marry?
Oh, no, she's not the one I didn't. In fact, she's the woman I came home on leave for. But I was a bit too late. She'd already found somebody else, and I didn't want to press the point, and I thought, that's it. One had been used to seeing Dear John letters, so it didn't come... it didn't upset me to that extent. I went to see her because, I mean, she had my civilian clothes and that sort of thing that I'd left behind. And we'd now been allowed to wear civvies in India, so I thought, well, I'll collect them and take them back with me. That's great. And I did just that. I went and saw her mum and dad. I've seen her since that, even since I came back. I went about 1947, I think, six. I went down to that part of the coast on holiday, and I spent the day down in Folkestone, where she was with her husband and one boy. They have a business down there, and I went to see her. All above board and that sort of thing. It was just a question of seeing her again, but I didn't. I ran around loose for years, and I didn't get married till I was about 36.
Did they give you any formal military musical instruction in the army? Or did you learn what you learned through having just to play?
No. I had some musical instruction in a school band, first of all. When I got to the army, I found that they did give us more, much more thorough. The tutors, just a book tutor, were much more comprehensive. And they did it, as most of the army things are done, by system. And it was nothing for the tutor to be set up and a chap who would be instructing you to say, let's take an instance, blow that scale. And again. And again. And again. Now face away from it. Now blow it. And again. And at the time, it's a real bugbear. But later in life, you think, it was great. Wasn't that a good way to be taught? It's like, if you look at today's education, they say, what's good of learning all these tables? But I learnt tables that way at school. And sat there for an hour, I suppose, singing twice, two, four. And then again, and then again, and then again. And then she would just hide it off the blackboard and point to you and say, twice two, three times two, five two. And this way it made your brain nimble. I found this much the same with the army. They were much more thorough about the instructions they gave. I would also, looking back, say that I knew nothing about music when I got into the army. I may know nothing now, but during my army career, I did. There's no doubt about it. There isn't the movement around the instruments so much. If you're given a cornet, you roughly stay on a cornet. But I never forgot my cornet playing, because in India, a little group of us in the drums got together, formed a dance band. One fellow who'd also been in the band played a clarinet, and he used to get it out and tootle. And somebody'd have a guitar, and he would strum, and eventually we all got together on the deal. And I said, hey, just a minute, I'll go and borrow a trumpet. Same thing. I'll go and borrow a trumpet. Let's have a go. And do you know our music? I don't mean this unkindly, but I don't think you're old enough to remember the days when every week the News of the World published a song. Every week, really, there was a song published in the news, words and music. And that was the music for our dance band. And all these things out the News of the World and propped it up and played it till we knew it off by heart. But we'd keep the music. And there were numbers that you could pick up here and there. And we might be said to be the forerunners of some of the crazy groups you've got about today, because none of us were bandsmen. We were all drummers. And we had a pianist, we had a piano accordionist, we had a clarinetist, we had a saxophonist, a trumpet player, a drummer, and a squeeze box. A couple were not in the band or drums at any one time, but most of the others had been in the band and had transferred either to duty companies or to the drums. But however, we got together for our own benefit. And in the end, we ousted the regimental dance band, who were considered a bit staid by the CO's daughter, no less, who was young, like us, and said, oh, no, Daddy, let's have the other band. We knew we were in with her, and we used to go and play at the dances, and collect it, you see? We shared it between us. There wasn't a bandmaster to take 50% and the other 50% between you. We said, well, we've got, shall we say, 100 rupees. And how many of us? Five of us? That's 20 each. It's as easy as that. And that was great. We had a uniform that was to wear white trousers and green shirts. No, not green shirts. White trousers, green shirts, and a dark red sash. We had the green and the dark red because it was part of our regimental colours. No ties. and we hardly ever sat down to play. We sat down between numbers, but in we stood up and blew. This is where Desmond Wakeley knew me quite well, because he was a young one pipper then, and he had a bird out there, who he married actually, and I've seen her recently. And we'd play at an officer's dance, and about midnight, when the sober heads had gone home, the youngsters used to come and used to say, "I can play one of those." And used to say, "Go on then, give us a chit." And they used to sign a chit. We used to take that to the bar and get booze. Of course, he'd sign for it, and we used to hand the chit in. We didn't care what he'd sign for, as long as we got the drink. And they used to have a go on our instruments. We didn't mind. It was all part of the fun. So that's the way my music knowledge progressed through.
What about learning the bugle calls?
Fairly simple. Routine, even if you're not in, even if you're not a bugler, you're in barracks, and when that call goes, you have to know what it is. And if you don't, the next fella does. And he'll say, "That's the fall in," so we'll all go out and fall in. Or, "That's defaulters," that's when you get CB, you know, naughty boys, go on parade, answer your names, this sort of thing. Drummers otherwise, there is a book of them, and we used, our routine was that after breakfast in the mornings and after room inspection, we'd all go off, and in Portland, where we were originally, there was, we were in a sort of old fort, and there was a big deep moat, a dry moat. And us buglers used to go down the moat, out of the earshot of anybody, and practice calls. You know, and we'd say, "Jim, how does that part of this call go?" And he'd blow it, and say, "I'll see if I get it. And is that right?" "Yes." Then you just practice the whole thing, and you know, and then perhaps an NCO would call us all up and say, "Right, one line. Now then, let's have come to the cookhouse door," you know. And we'd all blow "come to the cookhouse door." Or, "Let's have last post." We'd all blow "last post." Conducted. And this way we came to be competent at any call at the drop of a hat. I think it's a fairly simple matter, though, to get the hang of all these calls. It's like you operating that gadget, you see. You operate that like a professional. If I had to do that, I'd have to be taught. I could pick it up, but you've got it. We get bugle calls the same way, and you just do it by practice. And then don't forget, there is a duty bugler every day, and your turn comes round. And you're listed tonight as duty bugler for tomorrow. And you can't go on there and not know calls. You've got to do it the whole of the day through, till the next change of guard, and be prepared for the odd calls that come in. You know, the regimental sergeant major will send down and say, "Bugler, sound orderly sergeants," or "Orderly sergeant of D Company, I want." And you sound, there's a particular call which means that's D Company, and then orderly sergeant. And perhaps even at the double. And you sound all that off, all round the barracks, and he knows where he's got to go when he's wanted, and he doubles off there. All orderly sergeants, they all go. There's a bugle call for most things. If it's raining on Sunday morning, there's even a bugle call which tells you to wear your overcoats. They don't send round and say it. The duty bugler's just on hand, you see, and they say, "Bugler, sound overcoats." And he blows this call and everyone shouts, "Overcoats!" So they get overcoats ready there. They've probably got them ready, but they're waiting for that call. Overcoats, and they're already out in their overcoats. But very good system, very good scheme. There's a call for the regiment, a call for every different company in the regiment, so you can call anybody from that company. Now, there's a call for orderly corporals, orderly sergeants, sergeant majors, CQMSs, all officers. So somebody wants somebody. Bugler, sound this, that, or the other, and you've got to know them. And, I found it a fairly simple thing. I'd been in the army, 3 or 4 years? more than that, yes, 3 or 4 years, when I transferred to the drums. But I'd been listening to these calls for 3 or 4 years. Odd one or two that I'd probably not heard. But you look at the book and say, I never heard that one, blow it. Blow it. When the competitions come round for Sears Bugler, the chap has the book. And he doesn't give everybody the same calls. He might say, sound pioneers. And you think, pioneers? How does that go? Yeah, this is the sort of thing that could happen, unless you're well up with it. But most bugles, I think, were well up with it. They could blow it.
Do you have a way to help you remember things like that, that you wouldn't need to play very often?
I think it's they stick. All that you do is that you, when you are practicing, you do individual practice. That means that everybody's blowing a different call. I mean, I'm blowing Cookhouse over here and you're blowing Last Post over there, but I don't hear you, I only hear me, I'm practicing this. And on these occasions, lots of people would probably think one or two obscure ones that do come up. There's some that never come up in point of fact, obscure one, and they'd practice an obscure one. Somebody else will hear it and you'll find suddenly everybody's blowing that one. You know? And then when he calls them together and says, we'll have a group thing now, he'll say, let's have pioneers. Right? One, two. And everybody's blowing that one obscure call that somebody thought of. Perhaps the corporal wouldn't have thought of it if somebody hadn't blown it. But I don't think people were ever at a loss for that sort of thing. I think one or two funny things happened to me on calls. In India, I slept in the drum stores, which is a room not much bigger than this, actually, in which I had my bed and a fireplace there and a little annex out here, which was a wash place, which was never used as a wash place. It's almost gone for the showers. And I set fire to this place once, accidentally. And the bungalow went up. I did nothing, grabbed a bugle and went outside and sounded a fire call. Fire call's a thing you never sound unless you're away out somewhere and you can mute it so that you can practice and nobody will hear it by you and the next bloke. Then I went out and blurted out fire call and kept going until the duty bugler picked it up, you see. That was one occasion, and on another occasion we were in camp. The battalion were on training,